Hi Sameer, welcome to our podcast, The Big Unlock Podcast Season 6. So my name is Ritu M. Oberoi and I'm the managing partner here at Devo and Big Rio, based out of Gurugram, India. And always a pleasure to chat with all the CMIOs, CIOs, CDAOs, Chief Information and AI Officers here about, you know, all the latest things that are happening with healthcare systems. I hope this will be a really exciting and, you know, engaging conversation. So welcome to the podcast once again.
Thank you, Ritu. Hi, Sameer. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Rohit Mahajan. I'm the Managing Partner and CEO at Big Rio. And over to you, Sameer. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, folks. I'm excited about this conversation. I'm Sameer Sethi. I function as the AI and Insights Officer for Hackensack Meridian Health. We are a health system based out of New Jersey, which is a combination of 18 hospitals, close to 500 care sites. We do this with the help of around 40,000 team members, which are clinicians and non-clinicians. Our care is mostly across New Jersey. We have a very big digital presence as well. My focus within the organization is focusing on primarily four areas. One is data and analytics. This is where we produce and ingest data, you know, from various source systems, including our electronic medical record being the biggest one. My team helps with normalizing that data and making that available in the form of not just raw data, but also insights as well. The second is AI. This is the piece of the work that involves us moving beyond explaining why things have happened and actually getting into, or what has happened, and now getting into why something has happened and what may potentially happen as well. So to the prediction piece. Generative AI is a big piece as well now. As you all know, that those capabilities are more easily available to us through third-party models. So building capabilities that leverage large language models or generative AI capabilities is a big piece of our portfolio as well. The third is robotics process automation. This is where we write code to emulate human functions wherever appropriate. We have a very large program that focuses on automation of mundane tasks or tasks that require accuracy that can be delivered better by a machine, or at times even, you know, can be used to deliver speed when humans don't do it as fast as as machines can. We have close to, or actually now over 200 automations in production today. So really large portfolio. We've been doing this for quite some time. And the fourth is software development. This is where, you know, at times when purchasing certain software or capability is not the viable option for Hackensack. Either it's not what we need, or it's too expensive, or it's not available at all. We will write software and deliver it and make it available to our clinicians, to our operators. So that's what I do for Hackensack. I've been here for 3.5 years, and it's been a very exciting journey.
Thank you for that introduction, Sameer. Lots and lots to talk about. And, you know, we were very interested to hear how you think that AI is just not for the sake of AI, but how to actually put AI to the right use. So we would love to hear about some applications at Hackensack that you've built where you really feel that you've demonstrated that, you know, you can really use AI for transformational change and for making, you know, the patient experience better.
Absolutely. We've been excited about this. You know, we've been at this for almost 3 years now, with a very heavy focus on AI in the last 2 years. You know, as you know, 3 years ago, it was the conversation on AI was more machine learning, and now it's more generative AI. And I think the talk track behind why this is so important has changed as well. We at Hackensack because we're so serious about this, we have really thought about how do we put this to use, right? And this goes beyond just having a conversation of how AI is good and the governance, but instead, while we do that, we're also focused on building the right solutions, right? There's one thing to look at the likes of the ChatGPT and others and say that you can ask a question and get a decent answer back. But then I think the value is in embedding these technologies into the workflows. That's what we're most focused on, giving somebody access to a conversational AI, right? Whether it be through conversation chat or typing is one thing. It gets you to a certain thing. But if finding the sweet spot of how this is more customized, you know, to a clinician at the time of care, right, that is what Hackensack stands behind. A good example of this would be, you know, us being a hospital system, we see patients. And when we see patients, what our clinicians are tasked with is is to view a sea of data, really valuable data. And that takes time, time that clinicians are either don't have or are taking away from actually seeing the patient. What we did is one of our first use cases when the large language models started to become available to us was to use that, use generative AI, and then look at that sea of data to summarize it. So what we were essentially trying to do was better the experience. We all are consumers of healthcare, right? And I'm sure you guys have encountered a position, a situation where you've gone to a doctor's office and the doctor is staring at the screen while trying to listen to you. What that physician is doing, or that clinician is doing, is they're trying to understand your clinical record, which again takes time. And what we have done is we have made that easier. You provide a button to a clinician to say, summarize this patient information for us. That's available in seconds, milliseconds, right? And we have gone as far as, and that has evolved, as you can imagine, right? That use case. Initially, our first summarization was good. You know, it provided a general summary. But yeah, then what we very quickly learned through feedback is that it has to be summarized by specialty. So what we realized was that a summary that an oncologist expects different things in that summary compared to a primary care doctor, right? So we chose back then 8 specialties, and today it's almost 15, where now the physicians have the option to summarize by specialty. And that's been pretty valuable to us. So that's a good example of how we have used this generative AI technology that everyone's talking about and made it to good use. And by the way, it's a growing place for us, right? We have used it as far as even to summarize survey data. We collect survey information from patients and their families post-discharge. That information comes to us. And what we realized was that, and we very beautifully make that at least the structured data available in a dashboard, which is good. But what we realized is the patients were actually typing a lot of comments in there. So what we did is we actually called it a sentiment analysis on top of that unstructured data, and then giving it back to or to the business to use at a unit level, which wasn't happening. And the issue again is, you know, there's so much information out there, even for our operators, that there's only so many comments they can read. So what we did is let's do a synthesis in volume, right? Mm-hmm. Not just against one comment, but across various things that we are seeing or trends that we are seeing within unstructured data. And that also used generative AI technology. We're using a large language model to give that back to the business. I think it's a pretty important conversation, right? When we talk about AI, is how do we put AI to use and how do we customize it? There's an aspect of us looking, finding the right use cases, but there's a technical aspect of this as well, right? So there's a lot of conversations around how, and I may be digressing here a bit into maybe your other questions as well, but you know, there's a conversation around how I asked the likes of ChatGPT and they didn't give me the right answer, right? Mm-hmm. So what we do at Hackensack is we have put together almost a center of excellence that focuses on indexing. Why do we do this? It's because we make that answer better using indexing technology. So what we've been doing at Hackensack is we've just not been exercising the muscle of finding the right use cases and delivering that, but also how do we harness the technology and use it better? Because I think that tech is here. It's here to stay. It's really good. You just have to know how to put it to the right use.
Yeah. Sure. Thank you, Sameer, for sharing those use cases. You know, that's really incredible that you guys were able to do the clinical note summarization, especially for so many specialties, and, you know, show the customized information to the physicians. Did you at any step feel that there was pushback, or like how did you do the literacy part of it or the acceptance part of it? Because some people we talk to feel that, you know, innovation and new things are difficult for people in healthcare to accept and it takes much longer. But I'm sure if they're seeing the benefits, and, you know, it might have been a steeper curve. But what was your experience and how did you feel about that?
At Hackensack, and you know, this is a bit of us, you know, learning from our mistakes over time, right? I think how you build these things is really important. And when I say how, at least for this part of the conversation, I don't mean the technical piece. I mean the non-technical piece, right? You have to, I think what we did well is we first understood the problem that needed to be solved. And then I think we partnered with the people that wanted to solve the problem, so with the clinicians. And
okay.
We felt that if the right level of participation existed mutually, that there will be better acceptance. There's definitely speculation, right? We are very clear about setting those expectations, which is, you know, what this isn't, how accurate this is and how accurate this isn't. So going back to the example of clinical load summarization. Our intent isn't to replace anybody's work. Our intent here using AI is to have people work at the top of their license. So what, as a part of us doing this and building this technology, what we're telling people is this is not 100% accurate, right? And you still have the whole patient record to look at if that's what you choose to do. And if you were to see something in the patient record, in the summary that is generated by AI, then it is your obligation to go look into the patient record for it, right? But we have gotten you to a pretty good start here. So we're reducing pajama time for the most part. So I think that level of participation has helped us get better acceptance. For sure, I think, and by the way, at least for me and my team, you know, we take that pushback with open arms, right? Because I think that teaches us a lot. We as technologists are very keen on building technology. Well, in fact, it has to be used by humans. So when we receive that feedback, we take that pushback and actually consider feedback and say, you know, perhaps there's something that we're not doing correctly. Maybe we're not explaining what this is. And maybe we haven't built the right user interface and experience and haven't embedded that this capability correctly into the person's workflow. So I think it's all about looking at the positives of what that pushback means. And I think we've taken it to our benefit and in the right way. And I think it's worked out well.
Yeah. That brings to mind, you know, many years ago, I attended a lecture by Marshall Goldsmith, and he said, I don't know why people call it feedback. It should be feed forward, because anytime you get feedback, it's actually helping you move forward. And I really love that line, and I've shared that with so many people, you know, you should call it feed forward. So that's exactly.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, make a very strong attempt to build feedback mechanisms or feed forward mechanisms to your, right, to your comment there. I love it. You know, almost everything that we built. Right? Because I think not capturing that results in over time results in lack of adoption.
Yeah, because you're drifting away from what people actually requesting. And
So even if it's a basic thumbs up, thumbs down, right? I think we need that, right? Because the thumbs down signals is what prompts us to go back to the user and say, what happened here?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So we try not to complicate the collection of feedback, but we try to make sure we build feedback loops into almost everything that we deliver.
So you're saying that, you know, one of the keystones of AI adoption at Hackensack is that you're bringing everybody along for the ride and making sure there's like buy-in from everybody. And
I also want to add there, which is going to be valuable to this conversation, is, you know, we've thought a lot about governance, right? All of us have, but I think it's still such a word out there and people don't know what that means. So I'll tell you our journey. Our governance process has we call it our governance pyramid. It has a technical tier at the bottom, which is our team, right? Which is evaluating AI and building AI. But then on top of that sits three. I'll talk about the two, which are more important for this context. The first is what we call is our AI and automation governance group.
Okay.
This is a composition of 13 domains across the health system coming together. So when we built our governance process, we actually invited or had representation from every domain to come help build AI, evaluate AI. So it is, and we had folks from legal and HR and, you know, and clinical documentation, right, and finance. So everybody that we could find or every representation that we could find, we have included in the governance process. And that helped us quite a bit, right? And that helped us to having the voice from every domain when it comes down to AI use. The other is we brought in, which is the next level up on that triangle, which is the committee. And these are the folks that helped us prioritize. This is the ELT, primarily executive leadership team. And these are the folks that came in and had the voice around, everything looks great, but we can't do everything. So which one do we do first? Which are the focus areas for us? So I think that model has helped us quite a bit on focusing on the right problems. Our board has played a very larger role, which is sits on top of this, right? And finally at the cone there. We had our annual summit last year. And the journey for us was, as you can imagine, is when we started doing AI and the generative AI came in, you know, there was a rush of demands from the business. I hear this is available, do this. I hear this is available, this looks really cool. And at a certain point, I remember, didn't know what direction to look in, right?
But yeah.
That was demand for us. So what we did is we went to the board and we established six areas of focus for Hackensack. And the reason we did that is because we worried that if we didn't do that, we would be chasing the shiny object, right? Mm-hmm. So we, with the help of the board and our executive leadership team, we identified six areas of expertise. And the principle behind this was that if the use case didn't fall in these six areas, we would just not do it.
I see.
So our six areas were, one was creating personalized and equitable experience for our patients. The next was streamlining administrative and clinical efficiencies. The third was the capacity management and then burnout alleviation. The fourth was disease detection. The fifth is precision treatment, which is customizing treatments for patients. And the last but not least was research and innovation. And these are quite broad, so it allows us to, it's not that hard to fit stuff in here, right? But what we wanted to make sure is that every use case we brought to the table and we executed on, whether it be bought or buy, has to fit in one of these boxes or multiple boxes, right? And we have a scoring mechanism, by the way, that looks at it, and more boxes it fits in, the higher score it gets. So what we do is that every use case that comes to the governance committee goes through a scoring process, right, which includes ROI, these buckets that I mentioned, and that's how we get to what to work on. And that's been very, very valuable.
So most of the CIOs we talk to, you know, say that they're concentrating more on the digital front door and the patient experience. They want to stay away from disease detection and anything that requires like FDA approval. So I'm curious, when you talk about disease detection, what are some of the use cases there and how do you get around that? Because exactly the problems that you mentioned earlier with, you know, LLMs still having hallucinations and other things and a human in the loop having to review all the results. So for disease detection, how do you, like, I would be curious to hear like a particular use case on how you solve that.
That's a great question, Ritu. And I'll tell you, you asked that question rightfully so, with the frame of mind of generative AI capability and not machine learning. The reason is there is no hallucinations or almost no hallucinations in machine learning use cases. Okay. And that's the thing, right? I think organically there's so much buzz around Gen AI and use a large time around. People tend to think that AI is that and nothing else, right? Surprisingly, you'd be surprised about this. When we had a voting process at the last our board summit of these six buckets, and we said, please vote which ones, right, you prefer. Disease detection came at the top.
Really? That's so interesting. Yeah.
And I'll tell you why, right? And then followed by streamlining administrative efficiencies and burnout alleviation, right? As you can imagine, clinicians said, you know, alleviate burnout for us, right?
Yeah.
The operators in the room said, you know, administrative efficiencies. But overall, the theme that we saw was disease detection. Why? Because we are a hospital system, right? What we do realize is if we detect disease early, right, we will actually have healthier patients, right? So our use cases continue to focus on using machine learning technology and just not generative AI. The two use cases that I'll talk about is, one is mortality detection, right? So the theme behind this is that we've noticed that us as a health system, and this is a broader, just not a Hackensack problem, we don't do well with engaging with end-of-life care. You know, physicians and nurses are very passionate about fixing the patient, and we struggle with the fact that we can't do anymore, right?
Yeah.
So, and as a result of that, I'll use a personal story here, by the way. A few years ago, I lost my mother-in-law, and I still remember having that conversation with the doctors, and the palliative care team came in, and they said, we should have been here 6 months ago. And I remember having this conversation with the physician, and I said, what happened here? And, you know, the person sat me down, and I said, right? And I was very honest. I said, look, I've been in healthcare. You're a physician, so tell me what's happening. And they talked about how they're not programmed and wired that way. And if there was a nudge that would tell them, hey, guys, I don't think there's much hope here, right? Mm-hmm. That would help them take some right decisions or better decisions for the patients and their families. So what we did at Hackensack was we built a nudge to a clinician to consider palliative care and hospice when the model starts to see that there is an expected mortality. And the workflow that I'll share with you is a clinician goes into the patient record and say is prescribing a pain medication, you know, 250 milligrams of Tylenol, right? And at that moment, this thing pops up, which is called a BPA, which is best practice alert, right? It says the model is saying that for this patient, the chances of mortality within 6 months is this much. The clinician then says, okay, let me look at it again, goes into record, looks at, you know, lab results, looks at various other things and says, you know what? You're right. And they said, okay. What that okay does is it creates an order right there and then to have the palliative care team come and talk to the patient, That's all it's doing. So what we created is a mortality score translated into a nudge, translated into an order. That's where human factor engineering comes in. And what we did is we looked at what how a clinician would react to all these things and built these AI signals into their clinical workflow. And that's been pretty good for us because now what we're doing is we're sending patients to palliative care and hospice a lot sooner. I think these patients would have ended up in palliative care eventually, but using my personal example of my mother-in-law, it would happen sooner than that. That's one example where we are using disease detection. We didn't really detect a disease there. We detected mortality, right? The other example is CKD, chronic kidney disease. This is also an area where, you know, I think it's if detected early, as early as possible, yeah. I think it's that care is managed. I think that is managed better. So we have created capabilities where we are earlier detecting chronic CKD. That's been helpful. The third one that we're currently working on is actually chronic asthma as well. So
which is the third one, Samir?
Chronic asthma. I think these are some examples of it, but disease detection is, I mean, it's core to us, right? As a health system.
That's really interesting because we haven't heard that from other hospitals. So, you know, that's really incredible to hear.
And, you know, one thing I want to add is this isn't decision. This is what we're building is not decision tools. We're building decision support tools.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, we're still relying on the clinician to make that call. So that nudge that I talked about in the mortality score, right? It has I talked about the yes button, but there's a no button as well.
You're alerting them. And the final call is theirs.
And by the way, we talked about feedback, the no results in that feedback, right? Because they have to give us a reason why.
I see.
If they don't press yes, they press no. They have to give us a reason why. They type that in and then we move on, right? And then we come back. And so we learn from that feedback as well. But again, the decision and the conversation with the patients are all in the hands of the clinician. We are just meaningfully surfacing attributes that would make the patient care better.
I think this has been a really insightful part of the conversation. Thank you, Samir, for sharing those use cases for disease detection. Looking forward, you know, if you looked at the next 6 months or a year or maybe 2 years, what do you think the top three trends in AI would be? You know, I know we talked a little bit about agents in our prep call yesterday, and you had like a very good story about agents as well, where you said that agents are, you know, mostly an orchestration platform. So if you would like to talk a little bit about that, share what you think the next three big trends are going to be, or not trends, but like things which are going to, you know, come to the front line and be a focus area of focus for Hackensack.
I'll tell you, my top three are going to be agents, right?
Agents. Okay.
And I'll tell you why, right? This is an opportunity for us to use technology that is here now to orchestrate. Like for me, when I think about agents, it's a concept. And the concept is, how do you orchestrate different technologies to work together, right? And provide an output, right? Mm-hmm. That a human can interact with better, right? That's an agent. And in the past, folks like me have tried to build it ourselves. Similar to machine learning, right? Folks like me help build models. And today, models are available, right? Mm-hmm. Now, there are machine learning models versus large language models. But just using that as a concept, what I'm trying to portray here is that we've been trying to build these agents for a long while, but you know the tech, it had to happen from scratch. Orchestrating RPA, software, a database to all work together in tandem in a certain way and in a sequence wasn't that easy to do. We did it. And today, technology companies like UiPath and Google and others have built platforms to orchestrate that.
Yes.
Right? So now, the orchestration has become a lot easier. Why is orchestration important? The reason it's important, especially in healthcare, is because we are now just not relying on humans to do certain things, right? So let's look at what's happened in the past, right? We've been very good at building AI. Well, then what do we do with that AI? We give it to a human. And rightfully so, in certain situations, a human has to interact with it, like in the example that I described to you, mortality, and that's fine. No agent required there. But there are instances where we are building signals, AI signals, that does not require a human. The next step can still be taken by a machine. So in the past, what was happening is I was building these signals. So we were building these signals, but we were relying on the human to interact with it and do something about it when the human wasn't needed.
Yeah. to make it go further. But now you're saying it can go to the next
step. Now it can be done by a machine. And again, it doesn't, that doesn't hold true for all use cases and applications. Certain places you do need humans. But that's what I'm most excited about, right? Which is, how do I make sure in the places where I don't need a human, where I was relying on a human to take the next step, how do I build an agent to actually take it to the next step? Because why? Because then those insights will be used versus us relying on a human, and maybe at times human doesn't have the time.
Yes.
Program to do it doesn't have buy-in, right? Because there's a lot of things. So I think what I'm most excited about is how do I take those instances and put them to use? All these insights that we got, how do I take it? Now I have the liberty of moving into the next step without relying on a human to do it. So okay. I think that is the evolution of AI. That is the next. And that's why I choose this to be the three focus areas for me, right? Because keep in mind, now look at the portfolio that I'm privileged to own, right? It's RPA and AI and software. And now what the world has given me is a platform where I can plug all this stuff in together, yeah. Right? So I'll use an example, right? We as a health system receive a lot of denials from insurance companies. Mm-hmm. And we rely on humans to take that denial, synthesize it, get information about it, right? And then generate a new appeals letter and then send it out. That's a process, right? Requires expertise, requires humans. And there's impact to this is the fact that the time it takes to put that together is a time that we haven't received the money from the insurance, right? So it's a cash flow thing, right, for us. So what we are building is an agent that will do majority of that work. So in this case, this is about receiving a letter, a denials letter, which has information about the denial. It could be a modifier that's missing or a pre-authorization that we didn't include. And then use a large language model to synthesize that information. So that's step one.
Yeah.
It then goes and taps into a rule-based engine that we built that said, if this is based on this denial reason, add this modifier, you know, do this. It has and I'm oversimplifying what the team has to do for this, but it primarily relies on a rule-based engine to identify the opportunity and the deficiency in the previous claim in the submission. Then it switches over using that to create a new denial, a new claim, right, or an appeal, which again uses generative AI technology. It then uses RPA to push it to a human who will then look at it. We then use software for the UI UX piece for the person to say, yeah, I approved, good to go. And then now it goes for a processing again, right, with the insurance company. This was all done by a human. And yeah. This is where orchestration comes in. We now have a platform that can orchestrate the use of a large language model, then the use of a rule-based engine, then the use of a large language model again, and then RPA, all that switching together. That saves us time. That saves us a lot of money. A human is still involved towards the end of reviewing everything, yeah. But things that we didn't need a human to do to get it to a certain step were not done by machines.
Amazing. So great to hear that, Sameer. Rohit, do you have any last questions for Sameer?
Yeah, Sameer has given a lot of food for thought. I've been taking exhaustive notes, Sameer. I think I have enough questions for another complete podcast. But what I'd like to ask you is, and I'm very interested in the Center of Excellence on the data indexing part, so I'm going to come back to you separately on that as well. But what I would like to, from your side, share with the listeners on what motivated you to get into healthcare and how did you start and where you are at, you know, the story, a little bit of that would be great to end the podcast with.
It's a very good question. I love sharing this story, by the way. So this goes back to almost 15, 16 years. You know, I worked in financial services. I married a woman. She's an occupational therapist and worked as hard as I do, if not more. And I still remember her coming home. We got married in 2006. And I think this was around 2006. I was at Deloitte and not in healthcare. And I remember she said, you know, I see you like on the computer all day, right? You do great work. And obviously you're, you know, providing for the family, for our future family back then. But she said, you know, she said, I do the same thing, but I want to share some feedback with you, which is that I made someone walk today. What did you do? That triggered something in me. Look, I wasn't much of a charitable person. And I thought about that too. How do I fill that gap in? But I think that triggered, like, I could do what I do and evolve and be happy. But then maybe I can do something which is going to save a life or, you know, save somebody money in care. And I looked into various different things. And eventually I landed that I can do something in analytics. So, you know, that's what motivated is I wanted to continue having a job and a career, and at the same time make an impact, maybe without going back to school and becoming a doctor or a clinician, right? I don't know if I can do that. But this is my calling, where I think what the hard work that my team puts in, hopefully that's either helping someone live better, or in the example that I gave you, maybe die better. I don't know, right? So for me, it's a very passionate thing for me. I tell people all the time that I came into healthcare and I'm never going to leave it. It's just for those reasons. Every time I think about an opportunity beyond healthcare, I hear my wife saying, I made someone walk today, what did you do?
That's amazing. Amazing story, Samir. One of the things I always remember, this is Dean Nitin Noria at Harvard Business School. He was going around promoting this concept of saying that, look, there is obviously benefit to having a physical footprint because, Harvard has only a certain number of campuses. But what about intellectual footprint, which can span, the world or the universe? So I think, you have so many great ideas that can be propagated. So definitely going to be back in touch with you on that.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think what's amazing is, what's at least for folks like me, what's most exciting is the fact that, first of all, the data's there. Back in the day, the data wasn't there. There's so much data being generated. Our watches, our phones, our doctors, everyone's generating data, right? And that's available to us. The second is we're not alone anymore, right? I mean, I still remember the days where the only model that was available to you is the one model that you built. Well, now, Google and OpenAI, everyone's got a model, right? So I think there's so much opportunity between the data that's available and I think the capabilities that are available as well. The third thing I'll share, and I know we're almost at time here, is I think the willingness, right? I think the consumer part of the
piece
has been called for. I'll share this with you. I have a relative who I helped take to the doctor. I've been doing that for quite some time. And she, I remember pre-COVID, I would tell her to take a televisit. And she would say, no, I want to go see my doctor, like my actual doctor, right? Post-COVID, I'm going to her and asking her the same question about, do you want to go to your doctor? And she says, can I take a televisit? And that's right?
It's formalized.
It's telling where I think the world and consumers are expecting, are open to digital means of delivery.
Absolutely.
That's where I think technology is going to do really well. Healthcare will always be behind, in my opinion, because I think healthcare is a very people business. But I think the public is ready. So I think what excites me the most is the fact that the data is there, the capability is there, a lot of help is available, but even the consumers are ready for us.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, this was great, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Samir.
Likewise, Samir. Looking forward to seeing you soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much.